You're listening to Let's Eat In on the Heritage Radio Network. The following episode of Let's Eat In has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market reminds you that every bite has a story, so whether it's a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscious food choices can change the planet. Because at Whole Foods Market, every single purchase you make helps us support things like animal welfare, organic agriculture, equitable trade, and energy offsets. Let's think before we eat. Let's retake our plates.
Hey, hey, welcome to 2011. This is Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and this is Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza. Happy New Year, everybody, and I have a really good crowd here with me to help celebrate that. Starting off the year right, the good crowd. I started off the year to the second with some of these people. It was a long night.
For a few hours.
Yeah. For a few hours, it was wonderful. I hope everyone had a great New Year and are fully recovered by now. I think we are. Anyway, so those folks, I've had a couple of them here on the show, but a lot has happened since. Let's talk about that. Lena McCarthy from Anarchy in a Jar,
hey.
In a Jam. Wow.
Hey.
Thanks
hey.
For coming.
Thanks.
You've also got your apprentice, Emma.
I do. I have my apprentice, Emma, here with me today. And I think I was on the show exactly a year ago, me and Kadeem.
Oh, wow.
Remember that?
So we can go over
the year.
I think it was
almost exactly a year, yeah.
Okay, it's a good time to backtrack and then see how far you've come since that. And I do want to talk about that because that recent article in the New York Times about Brooklyn, the marketing label or the brand or something. And there's a lot of talk about your brand. I mean, not as specifically, but the ones that are being, you know, acquired by Williams-Sonoma and stuff like that. So anyway, let's do it.
Yeah.
I also got Ben Flanner here. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having.
Ben is the director of farming operations. Is that a good one? Brooklyn Grange.
Head farmer.
Yeah. He's a farmer at Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm. It's in Long Island City, and it's an acre of fresh, awesome, locally grown food. And one of the people who buys such ingredients is Chef Patrick Connolly from Bobo.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. And the director of farming.
The director. Are you the
director of cooking?
I don't like chef. I like director of cooking.
What about executive chef?
Yeah, the administrative director of cooking.
Okay. chief cook. Okay. Deputy cook. No, not good.
That would be a sous chef, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Darn. What do I know? Business. So this is your first time on the show.
Yes, it is. Great to be here.
Cool. And you also buy Heritage Foods pork products.
Yes, I do. Yep.
So
every Tuesday, porters, bellies, shoulders.
Good stuff. So how do you keep up? Like, obviously, the rooftop is covered in snow right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are done pulling up stuff for the season.
Is 100% off season right now.
Is that kind of sad?
Yeah, it's sad, but it's also, you kind of welcome, when you work really hard all summer through the busy part of the season, you kind of welcome a couple months off because you can restore your sanity and start making a plan for next year and catching up with people that you haven't had time for all, you know, during the busy part of the season, so.
And hibernate. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's also kind of necessary.
Cool. And party like crazy. So.
Cyclic.
And Chef Patrick, or whatever you want to be called, how do you deal with this lack of, not lack, but shortage, I guess, because that was a good part of your food that you used, but there's a lot of, are there still a lot of local farms that have winter veggies that you're buying from?
I mean, there's not a lot. You just have to be, you have to be realistic about it, first, and second, you have to be reactionary to what is available. So I think a lot of restaurants have become, and a lot of just home cooks for that matter, have become accustomed to starting off a meal with a recipe and then executing that recipe no matter what. So like, I'm going to make an avocado salad. I need to find avocados no matter what. what I mean by reactionary is sort of finding, working from what is available. You know, it seems, and it's difficult for people who aren't naturally good cooks or director of cooking operations in their own home to do that. I think, you know, just sort of part of becoming a better cook, becoming better educated about different techniques and, you know, how you can prepare these other vegetables, you're better set up to deal with, you know, slow seasons like we're dealing with now, you know.
So be less choosy, kind of go with the flow.
Exactly.
Yeah, it takes
some practice. Let nature determine what you're going
to
cook.
Yeah, so if you go to the market and there's, you know, there's tons of McCumber turnips, and there's been tons of McCumber turnips for the last 2 months, and it's like...
You're like, what is that?
What is it? Well, you know what? Take it home and mess around with it, you know? You know, that's the only way you're going to remain, you know, truly loyal to eating local, and you're also going to be a better cook at the end of the day, so...
And I hear a lot of people who want to be, who say they want to be a locavore, but they just can't do it in the winter. Is that just a pickiness, maybe? Like, you just have to branch out and try McCumber turnips and...
I think a lot of people that are really dedicated to that way of eating are not picky. And I think you can't be picky. Allergies are one thing, but, you know, like, I don't like that. Well, you need to get over that, you know? I just don't, you know, I think, yeah, they're not picky. I think it's just, you know, you just got to try it out, you know, and see what happens.
And what are your favorite winter ingredients to play around with right now?
Favorites sort of have to be what's available, I guess, you know, like we're still getting a decent amount of sunchokes and those are always my favorite. I'm surprised how they're not as popular as they should be, you know, making chips. I think that sunchoke chips make an amazing garnish. I like to put them on top of soups and,
That sounds yummy. Yeah. So you slice them up and deep fry them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you could have like a potato soup or celery root soup and just sprinkle
or sunchoke
some of those on.
Soup.
Exactly. You know, but use those more as a texture thing. And, you know, obviously turnips, lots of turnips. I'm still getting some Swiss chard still, so, you know, I use that.
And what about, like, are there a lot of greenhouses that are growing greens? Because I see greens all the time in the green market, appropriately, I guess, all throughout the year. Do you think that those are all grown in ground, or what do you think, Ben? Like,
I think most of them are. A heavy frost will typically wilt the leaves pretty heavily, so... There's something to keep them.
Although I did notice on my rooftop, some of the snow had melted away and the spinach was like fine.
Yeah, it starts popping back really fast, doesn't it?
It was totally could weather.
And then, of course, it gets so sweet in the cool weather too. It produces more sugars.
That's right. Yeah, sugar spinach.
Mm-hmm. Same with kales and other brassicas.
I think that there's a whole variety to the flavors of food and how they taste at different times of the year that you could really recognize and bring out, try to play around with. What are some of your favorite dishes to make with these things lately, Chef?
Oh, gosh. Honestly, my favorite dishes are like the one pot thing. And really, like I said, not going into it with a recipe, but sort of... you know, doing with what you have. So, you know, you have a chicken in the house, you have a duck in the house, throwing it in a pot, throwing some kale in there, throwing collard greens, some kind of root.
That sounds good.
You know, and just potatoes, yeah, and then just whatever. I mean, however it turns out is great. I mean, the only unfortunate thing is if somebody, you know, you have a guest over and they want the recipe and you're like, well, I have no recipe to offer you. You know, it's kind of like these things that exist once and then never again. So
Lena, I'm sure you have tons of jam in storage.
Yes, definitely. And this is the time of year, I think, especially that people really crave preserves, which makes sense. I mean, that's the whole point of preserves, is to keep you
It feels
the winter.
A little silly to eat strawberry jam in the summer, right? Or the
spring. Yeah, right, exactly, in the spring. And I think, you know, I certainly still get, you know, berries freeze really well, so I can make jam year-round. But certainly there's certain things, like citrus tends to be something I do more with in the winter, because you can get your great citrus from California. yeah. in the winter. And, you know, citrus is something that I never can get local. not yet, at least. Maybe global warming will change that. At this point, citrus is from California. So really, in the winter, there's it's nice to be able to still play with things that are, you know, pseudo-seasonal. And I think people crave it, too, in the winter. People really want things like citrus. And the same thing, I think, with, like, you know, with eating duck or one pot dishes and brassicas like kale. I mean, there's something about the winter that you crave that kind of warming food anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something also kind of the thing about eating locally and seasonally. Part of it is that it's good to miss the things of summer. You know, I mean, Ben and I were just talking the other day about missing ramps, you know, thinking about that first, you know, nice time in May when the first ramps come up and it's so exciting and right. they're in the markets and everyone's crazy for them. And then, you know, by the end of May, you're kind of sick of ramps because uh-huh. you've seen them everywhere and you've been
smell
eating
like
them.
Garlic.
And Ben has, you know, garlic odor coming out of his skin. And, yeah. So I think, but it's so, you know, there's something about missing something that's actually really nice. It makes you really appreciate it when you can't get good stuff. So
and that's what makes it special, right? Because you
yeah.
can't get it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So accept that truth, people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fact.
Yeah.
All right. what flavors do you have coming up? Any citrus things?
Yeah, I have my grapefruit and smoked salt.
That one's good.
Clementine marmalade.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Yum. Mm,
yeah. And lime and pandan marmalade.
What's pandan?
It's a Southeast Asian leaf that has kind of a nutty, coconutty flavor
to it. Oh, so it's like lime and coconut.
Yeah, the lime and the coconut, yeah.
And that's like a jelly?
Jelly. It's a marmalade, so it's Ooh. I use actually I cut the limes up so the skins are in it.
Oh, I've never heard of that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
Cool. Anything with apples?
You know, it's interesting. Apples? I was just talking to Emma, my jam apprentice, who's sitting next to me. We were just talking about how apple is a funny flavor. I did an apple chutney, and I had an apple flavor through the fall when it was particularly seasonal, and people like it, but they don't love it. Like, apple is something that people don't, it's not the most popular flavor. And so I do a little with it, but.
Maybe it's because it's so ubiquitous. It's like, oh,
I
boring.
So.
Apple.
Blah. And apples are a little boring in jam. Mm-hmm. You know, I add stuff to them, like interesting spices and booze, which helps make them a little more interesting, but. Yeah. You know, in some ways, what makes apples interesting is that they are kind of boring. I think when you mix them, put them in pies, or, you know, you use them in baking, and you can cut, they're like a good accompaniment, but somehow they're a little less interesting when you put them in a jam.
Another interesting thing about apples that goes along with that a little bit is that they store so well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't necessarily need to be
That's
preserving
them. That's why
they're
not as special, because you can have them all year
round. Yeah, you don't necessarily need to be preserving them. You can still pull out a
yes,
decent one that
a
was
fresh apple.
That was picked this last fall. Whereas, like, pears or something, which is a tree with similar genetics, like, they don't store that well. They bruise and they go bad so fast. So maybe it's partially just works out on its own, too, the fact that some of them are more interesting to preserve than others.
Yeah, pear is something that people definitely seem to like more in a jam.
Yeah, you had a pear chutney. No, a fireman's hot pear.
Yeah, a pear with chipotle, a little smokiness, and then I have a pear ginger.
Oh yeah, that's
yeah, and those they're always really popular, and people seem excited about them. Whereas the apple, maybe it is what you're saying, that apples are just kind of boring. You know, apple butter is something people seem to like. I do it
apple
occasionally,
sauce,
but
yeah.
But they don't, it's not exciting to them. It's something more, and I think it tends to be with the flavors I do that people crave more of the flavors that are unusual a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Well, I think it's such a drastic transformation from the taste of a fresh apple, and then the cooked apple is so different. I like the fresh apple better.
For sure. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So apparently you haven't been able to keep enough jars of jam on shelves of places.
It's true. It's been going crazy.
Yeah, and it's still pretty much a one woman, except for Emma.
Yeah.
Operation.
It's two women when Emma's around. But she's off to Amsterdam for the next few months, so...
How are you going to keep up with this demand?
I'm going to keep making it as much as I can. So, yeah, luckily I have a good kitchen space now, so it's easier to make it. But it's definitely, you know, it's got to keep churning it out. Uh-huh.
And when will we see Anarchy in a Jar in Williams-Sonoma stores?
Theoretically, possibly soon. Mm-hmm. No exact date yet, but some point soon. So yeah, I'm just going to start with a few of their bigger selling stores, and then, but they've been working on trying to, make their product line a little more interesting. And mm-hmm. so they've definitely been seeking out some of the local, New York City.
Brooklyn.
Yeah. The Brooklyn brand. Company, the Brooklyn brand. Yeah.
And did you consider putting Brooklyn in the name of your company and decide not to for any reason?
Yeah, I didn't really consider it. But it's definitely something that, I think, you know, I think Brooklyn as a brand, I think it's great that it's helping a lot of small companies do well. But it's something that I don't know that that's like what defines my company.
Your company? Okay.
I don't know that it's Brooklyn that defines my company. Okay. You know, it happens to be where I live and where I make product. And it certainly, you know, the Brooklyn fad at the moment helps certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that it, is something that I want to define my company with.
Okay.
You know, but I think, something I'm always a little hesitant about fads. I think I understand them. I mean, that's how we work as humans. We're drawn to like fads and getting obsessed with things and, you know, and it makes our lives, I guess, a little more interesting if we can go through, you know, interesting, you know, if we get excited about stuff. But I don't know that, as a company that I would want, that I wanted to find myself that way.
Right. And Ben, I know that you're only like 1/5 of the team at Brooklyn Grange, but was there any thought behind having the word Brooklyn in there, especially after I know that you plan to have it in a rooftop in Brooklyn and over a series of events, it ended up in, you know, Long Island City, very mm-hmm. close to Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think we were really thinking about it in terms of the brand. I think it was more just the fact that the Grange is the national association that it is, has all these small divisions that are in the certain locales where they are, and we were all, of course, living, working, you know, spent a lot of time in Brooklyn, so it made sense at that time. But yeah, I think I agree to some extent on the branding thing. You don't want to overdo it or you know, create any illegitimacy in a brand by like having the name pop up too often. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it necessarily works as a positive or a negative marketing
right.
tool.
And this is actually in a lot of restaurants now too. Brooklyn, the Brooklyn, what's it called? Fair? Is it? I'm like Brooklyn Star.
The Brooklineer is the Brooklineer bar in Manhattan that I think people have been mentioning and maybe making fun of a little bit.
The Brooklyn Larder. The yeah. You know, what does Bobo mean?
Change the subject.
Bobo is it's an elision of the term of the words bourgeois and bohemian.
Oh, yes. That's cute.
Bourgeois in Brooklyn.
Yeah, right. Actually, we found a website a couple weeks ago where it's like they do like Paris versus New York and these cute little like captions, and mm-hmm. So they do like hot dog, croque monsieur, and stuff like that. And this one was like hipster Bobo for some reason. Yeah, that's kind of a style. But
it's also a chicken farm, no?
It's true. It is a chicken farm, Bobo chickens.
Do you get your chickens from Bobo?
I don't.
Oh.
I've had them and they're fantastic, but yeah. I don't.
That would just be too much.
Yeah. It's a common nickname with very large people, you know.
You could call a dish the roasted Bobo chicken. I don't know.
Yeah.
Bobo squared.
Yeah.
Sorry. I want to make sure that everyone has time to answer my favorite question, which is, what would you make on a sexy, steamy, hot date? Chef Patrick. You're trying to cook to impress.
Jesus. Oh, God. I don't know. I find that if you deglazing a pan with alcohol of any kind, that's the key move.
What?
Once that happens, you really don't need to serve anything.
Do you let the alcohol get into the burner a little bit so it flares up and go, woo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That adds to it.
That's the move.
Yeah, that's the move.
All right.
Is that how you wooed your wife?
That's how. That's it.
That was deglaze.
Yeah,
deglaze.
Done deal. Done deal. Deglaze. It was a bottle of white vermouth. Still have it. Break was it out it? On anniversaries. Deglaze.
Clams? Anything in particular you can recall? Was there like one meal that just...
No,
was...
see, that's the thing. You don't get to the meal. You don't eat it, actually.
Oh, yeah. Right, right.
Deglaze, and then that's it.
Sounds like a hot date.
Sounds a little bit like there is like an element of danger to cooking. I think that is always a, you know, kind of exciting.
Right.
I could burn myself in the whole house.
And nothing sexier than singed eyebrows.
Okay, I'll have to try that one. Ben?
I was thinking polenta with a really rich stock from some leftover Thanksgiving turkey or... some roasted chicken.
Aw.
And then with some greens on the side.
Oh, that sounds sweet.
Nice and wintry.
Aww. Yeah.
That just makes me feel all cozy.
If it was summer, it'd be something different, of course.
Well. Yeah. Okay, Lena?
I was going to say breakfast, but we actually had polenta and greens for breakfast the other day.
Oh, so that's
so maybe that was
it.
A hot, steamy breakfast day. No, Ben did make a really great polenta recently with...
Did you have a poached
homemade
egg on top?
Yeah. Yeah, we actually had scrambled eggs, I think. Uh-huh. But a poached egg is really good with polenta. And we had some kale. It was pretty amazing.
That's what I'm talking about. He probably deglazed the pan. And then they had to eat it the next morning. That's what I'm talking about.
No, polenta's no good the next day. It's like jelly.
Yeah,
it's like rubber.
That's true.
Anyway,
we have to get
that
Emma
sounds
to
good.
Get a chance to say.
Okay, Emma, what's the sexiest date meal idea?
I like menu. Cozy meals. I think anything comforting and warm, like roast chicken or something braised, is always delicious and comforting.
Okay.
I like that.
Comfort food is deglazed, preferably. anything deglazed. And I know, okay, I, you know, can I say that you guys are a couple?
Yeah.
Lena and Ben?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Was there any like special home cooked meal that was one of the first dates that you had? Because I know you both love to cook.
Yeah, we must have had something.
Maybe you went to Bobo.
There's a lot of cooking that goes down.
Patrick's
it all
like,
blends
yes.
together.
We did have a great meal at Bobo, actually. It was in the fall, right? Yeah, it was a few months ago.
Yeah.
And it was perfectly timed because it was right towards the end of the season when we both were really tired and we had just been doing deliveries like all day. And we were exhausted. Mm-hmm. And it was so nice because we got to Bobo and Patrick made us really wonderful food. And it was just what we needed. It was like to have this really nice meal at the end of a hardworking day. So
yeah, it's nice to be the last stop on Ben's delivery because he gets to hang out with me, and then Lena came by.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah,
no, I bet that's also really nice to just go and kind of be in a restaurant but have something cooked by a friend is always
a
huge plus.
That's what it's all about. And when I, you know, if I don't know who I'm cooking for, that's who I pretend. I just pretend it's Ben. You know, yeah. That's the key to success as a director of, you know, cooking.
So any collaborative, because I know you guys did this awesome collaborative dinner in the summer where you, Patrick, cooked on the rooftop of Brooklyn Grange and served a delicious meal.
We were just talking about it. Nothing planned yet, but there will definitely be more. And Patrick has his whole Plate to Gate series, which you might want
to
mention.
Plate to Gate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this past summer, well, the sort of the farm to table term in Britain is gate to plate, so... Just kind of a reversal of that, trying to remain original as much as possible. We called it Plate to Gate. So we did a series of six dinners over the summer where we took our crew from Bobo out to the farms that we source from
and did
a meal there. So we did a brunch out at Never Sink in the Catskills and also a dinner in their barn later on. did a 4th of July oyster roast at Mike Kaczynski's place up in Greenport in the North Fork.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did three dinners at the Brooklyn Grange, and they were smashing success. And you just can't, you can't beat having a meal from the produce right there behind you and then the skyline of Manhattan in the background. Yep. So
Patrick would run out in his chef's clothes, go pick an herb.
Oh yeah. That was my dream come true. Like, oh, I need time. Well, excuse me, I'm just going to walk down the way a little bit. So
I must say he was good. He knew where everything was, because it was kind of, you know, to some it was kind of a maze. There's a lot of plants up there. It's a big area. But
oops, I grabbed horseradish instead of, yeah.
Yeah, he knew where his favorite purple shiso was. He knew where the peas Aww. Were.
Yeah, he's trying to hide that from me. He's got one plant over in the corner.
Shiso?
Yeah, shiso. Yeah, it's usually another plant hiding in the corner, but no, it's shiso.
That's great.
So we got a few. We'll hopefully do another, you know, three or so this summer. And yeah,
it's actually a really nice, I mean, it's nice in many ways. It's nice to have, you know, eat on the farm, but it's especially seeing a farm, you know, the Grange is a hardworking operation, and normally when you're up there, you know, we're picking like madmen and, you know, running around like mm-hmm. crazy and, you know, doing a lot of work, a lot of labor. And there's something really wonderful about going up there and having, the minute you get up there, there's like some amazing Bobo person handing you a cocktail, you know? And
right.
and then you walk down and the table is like so beautiful. And Patrick and crew did a really nice job of just making it really like magical
that
up there.
That was pretty amazing.
Christmas lights
True, nice
and
balance.
Lanterns, and it's just such a nice thing to suddenly be like, oh wow, this hard working place of, you know, farming and labor can for an evening be transformed into kind of a magical place of eating and enjoying the fruits of the labor.
That know? Must have been a really hard feat, because I remember the tables, and you fit a lot of people, were on top of like a bed that you had recently harvested, right? And it was kind of like elevated, so like the chairs were like, I kept almost falling backwards, but like, you knew you were on a farm. But
exactly.
It was like, it was very,
maybe hay bales next year for the bench.
Ooh.
Oh,
classy.
Yes.
What was I gonna say? So any plans in store, any changes for Brooklyn Grange this summer?
I'm spending a fair amount of time just thinking about the crops and how to do them smarter, more efficient, and tailored to what all the people want.
Okay.
And a couple other little ideas, but nothing major. We're just going to try to do everything better.
And what did everybody want? Tomatoes?
Everybody wanted tomatoes. Everybody wanted shishito peppers.
Oh.
Mexican sour gherkins, the little...
little...
AKA mouse melon.
Are they like cornichon?
No. They're in the family, but they're unique. They look like small little classic watermelons with the whitish pattern on a green.
Everybody wanted those, huh?
They did. Those were very popular. Sun golds, of course, in terms of the specifics of the tomatoes, you can hardly grow enough of those.
Okay, cool. And Patrick, what do you think of like chefs having, you know, rooftop gardens in their restaurants? Do you garden yourself?
We have you know, some pots for mostly herbs and some mm-hmm. tomatoes at the restaurant. We've always made plans or hope to do a rooftop farm on the building adjacent to Bobo without any success. So this year we're just going to expand, you know, the herbs that we're able to do on our garden and on the patio from our second floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully in the future with other restaurant projects that rooftop farm will be a part
wow.
of that restaurant.
Cool. Know. That's, I think that, you know,
it
I
makes sense though, don't you think?
Like, exactly. Because you have that, like when you were cooking on Ben's rooftop, you have everything right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, but you have to be realistic about it. You can't, you know, there's no way I can make one salad and it's going to be completely from, you know, this 1,000 square foot space above the restaurant. You know, it has to be herbs or, you know, things simple that are gonna, you know, that makes sense. You don't want to be overly ambitious. Let Ben take care of all the ambitious
right.
stuff.
Right. So I was gonna say, these guys are pros at what they do, and you're pros at cooking them. Yeah. Ben, do you have any thoughts on more chefs kind of getting the green thumb?
Yeah, I think just like what Patrick said, you can't be too ambitious. Focus on a couple crops, but yeah, as long as the space is there and the sun's beating down on it all day, might as well
right.
get something photosynthesizing and producing some food.
Well, look forward to that. I just got my seed catalogs too, so I'm going to be picking through and seeing what works. And
nice.
Sun Golds. That sounds good. I'll have to check out those cucumbers too, you mm-hmm. mentioned. All right. So thanks again for joining us. Let's go eat lunch now.
Sounds great.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you guys. See you next week on Let's Eat In.
Thanks.